Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome, everybody. This is your host, Chris Dekel. In studio with me today, I have Julie Grace with Grace Design, a turnkey marketing company that covers everything from marketing strategy to design to delivery of the product. And also in the studio with me today, I have Reed Trago, who is the owner of Huntington Learning Center. And he'll be talking about things they do and the problems kids have in schools today and how they help them. So welcome, both of you.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for bringing me here.
Yep, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, super. Well, very glad you made it today. People will learn a lot. And I want to start with you, Julie, if I can. You've got quite a background in marketing, particularly for nonprofits. You know, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, my background is I have a BS in advertising design from Maryland. And after school, went up to Boston, worked in an ad agency there. And then when I moved back to D.C., I started working on my own. And D.C. has a lot of nonprofits. So I've worked with companies like C-SPAN, American Red Cross, United Way, a lot of other nonprofits that might not be as well-known. But I've also worked with for-profit. But my passion is to work with associations and companies that do services, provide services, or create products that help improve the lives of people.
And what kind of companies have you worked with so far that do that sort of thing? What sort of products have they had?
Well, as I mentioned, United Way, American Red Cross. I've done work for a lot of colleges as well. And then I work with PR firms that have worked with the U.S. Health and Human Services Department, where we've done healthy baby campaigns or eye campaigns, healthy eye vision campaigns. So it's just things that come my way in that respect are what I really enjoy.
Oh, How does working with a nonprofit differ from working with a for-profit corporation?
Well, I think with nonprofit, it's more about community outreach and on the projects I've been working on. So we need to understand, who the target audience is, and what is the vehicle that they will receive, where they will receive the message. How do we get that message out? Whether it's print, or radio, or just reading posters. Direct mail campaigns.
Or radio.
Or radio.
Very good. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you approach a marketing program for a company. I understand that you place a big premium on a strategy before you start doing things. Tell us about strategy. What is that? How do you get there?
Well, thank you for that question. I believe that strategy is very, very important. A lot of companies, and we're not talking nonprofit, I'm talking companies in general, kind of bypass this step. What a strategy does is it helps create value for your company because you're defining to the customers what your product or service is in a way that they will be able to relate to. And it also helps define the vehicles or avenues that you're going to take to get that message out to your target audience, whether it's print, whether it's social media, whether it's your website. So the strategy just really creates the foundation to what you're defining your company in a way that your target audience is going to understand and to get that message out to that audience.
Yeah, do companies often know who their target audience actually is? Do they really understand who those people are?
I'm not quite sure. It depends on how much work they've done to understand who really utilizes their product or service. If they're going to market to everybody, they're going to decrease their return on investment. If they can clearly define who their target audience is, then the return on investment is going to be much stronger because they're really going to hit that audience.
Sorry. How do you help them zero in on and it's not just one audience either, is it?
No. I think you want to think of answers, ask questions like, what type of person buys your product or service? What do they do for their job? What type of education do they have? How do they receive information? So when you're thinking about marketing to them, how are they going to receive that information? So there are many, many questions that you'd want to ask that will give you and help you to define who your target audience
is audience.
Yeah, I want to say, and then the second and third tier of audiences as well.
So, you know? And you might have a different message for each one of those as well.
That's
result.
Right. That's
so
right.
That's why that's important.
That's right. Or you might market it in a different way. I mean, you know, some people are definitely into the social media stream right now, and others that may be a very, very important part of your target audience does not do social media. So you really need to strategize how do you reach that particular audience.
Yeah. Now, you know, what kind of, if I were going to advertise my company, what kind of questions would you ask me to help you, you know, define a strategy?
Well, first I'd ask you, what is your company? You could ask the question, what is your DNA? What makes your company the company that you have? How do you see it? How do you want the public to see it, internally, externally? What are your goals and your objectives? What is your target audience? I would ask you all of those questions. How do you see your company growing? Things like that.
Yeah, and where the opportunities are, and what do you think it would take to get to them?
That's right.
So there are a variety of questions that help you gain real clarity about what's the company like, what's their market, who have they gone to, who's buying it now, as well as what's the future look like, what could happen there.
Absolutely. And I find even when I'm creating a logo, I'm asking companies these same questions, which sometimes is the first time they're even thinking about it. So it really helps for an owner or a company in general to understand who they are and how they want to be perceived.
Like Yogi Berra said, if you know, if you don't know where you're going, any path will get you there.
Yes and no.
Without a strategy, you really have no guidance. You know, it's like, you know, another one of those great ones, you know, when you come to the fork in the road, take it.
That's right. You're just putting a lot of effort into a lot of different places, and you actually have no way to really see where your investments are growing and where it's worthwhile to continue.
Yeah. So that's the audience, the buyer side of it. What do you do about with the product side of things? If a company has a set of defined products, do they have personalities or things that you zero in on there?
Do you mean the products? Well, again, it's very similar, but you want to understand who is using these products. Or is this product going to grow, and can it grow into other areas as well? And can we market to those areas?
So, do products take on personalities?
Oh, yes. I mean, we can define them, too, with our advertising or marketing messaging.
Have you got an example of that? You know, maybe like Apple or somebody like that?
Well, Apple is a great example. I mean, I just look at Apple or Whole Foods. I love talking about Whole Foods because that is a full, complete marketing strategy from everything about that store, the environment itself, the people that work there, the products that they sell, everything that they seem to do is a conscious effort for their what they define as their identity.
Wow. So it goes beyond just the company. It's really a complete branding picture that the world has of you, your company, and how you go to market.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
And how many companies really have a well-defined brand strategy?
Are you talking large companies or smaller companies?
Yeah, well, is there a difference?
I think so. I think the larger companies can afford to take the research and do what they can with it, defining their brand much more clearly. I think a lot of smaller companies feel they don't have the resources or don't see the need to define their brand, to figure out who they are exactly and how they want to be perceived. So I think it hurts them because it doesn't take them outside the box. It doesn't tell the audience why to use them because their brand is not established.
You know, their brand X, Y, and Z are undifferentiated. In other words, you're just like the next guy.
That's right.
Yeah, and why is Apple perceived differently than, say, IBM, you know, and there's a great contrast there.
Well, as a designer, Apple's just cool.
So if you want to be cool, you have to buy one of those things with an Apple in it.
Everybody knows how designers love Apple.
Yeah. Do they ever? So now that we've got a defined strategy, we understand our products and, you know,
and
how we want
to
work with them. What's the next step in developing an advertisement? You know, an advertising campaign, whatever that might be, a promotional campaign. What do you do next with them?
Well, I think it is defined by your strategy.
Yeah.
You know, if you're, like I said, as I mentioned earlier, if your target audience is one that tends to do a lot of social media, then okay. you try and implement a good social media program. If your audience is one that still reads a lot, whether online or, you know, newspapers, then you want to go towards that as well. So, but I think the key ones are you must have a brand. You must establish a strong brand identity. You need a website, a strong, clear website. I see a lot of bad websites because you go to the website and it doesn't tell the viewer what you're doing.
You get them for a dollar.
Well, they're going to get the dollar investment return too. You know, a website needs to clearly define how you are helping the viewer. That is the utmost important, in my opinion, objective to a website. And a lot of companies just start talking about their company. They don't really answer the question why the viewer wants to be there and why the viewer wants to continue through your website.
It's just the modern-day electronic version of what we used to call a tombstone ad.
Yes. But that's a shame because it's a perfect opportunity to gain more customers, to build a community. So,
and give yourself a definite, definable difference in the marketplace.
That's right.
So, you know, to do that, it requires a message.
Messaging is extremely important. It's critical. You know, it's telling the consumer or customer why they want to come to you for your product or service. And you need to spend some time in it. You want to grab their attention, but you clearly want to tell them how you're going to fill a need or desire that they have.
So the first thing you've got to really do is, you know, attract their attention, you know, and convince them very quickly.
Right.
You know, that you understand their problem and based on all the things that they are seeing that go along with this, that they are in some way that you're a credible person that they need to consider and read more and learn about.
Right, and they're going to benefit in some way by doing that.
I see. And what kind of, you know, have you got any examples of the kind of things that, you know, might illustrate that? If I were selling Whole Foods, what might my message be?
Well, your message is that the foods are healthy, that the animals are healthy themselves, that everything about Whole Foods, if you're concerned about the environment or concerned about social or corporate responsibility, Whole Foods meets that concern.
Oh, okay. So, you're somebody that thinks like I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got a product that, you know, I'm kind of looking for.
Right.
Gosh, what a novel concept about advertising.
And their messaging is also, we care about our customers. So when you walk into the store, if you have a question about any product, most people that work there can answer your question, and they're very extremely helpful. So.
And spending a lot, this doesn't have to cost a lot, does it?
The messaging?
Yeah.
No, it depends on I think,
on
your company
and
where you're going.
Like it, obviously, but.
You know, but once you clearly define a very strong message, you can use it throughout all of your marketing efforts, and it does help define your brand. So.
You know, we've got a strategy, we've got target markets, we've got a message. The next step in this is, you know, putting together an actual tactical campaign.
That's right.
And you know, today there are a lot of options.
That's right.
There are a lot of options. There are new options that people are still trying to figure out how to use.
And they keep coming up every day, different vehicles, different ways.
Yeah. So, you know, what kind of areas do you consider when you're putting together a brand, you know, a program?
Well, you know, we try and consider the whole package. Again, is it print? Is it online? Is it offline? Is it social media? Is it creating a blog? Is it just encouraging them to do more networking, to do seminars? It's the whole gamut, but you really, again, have to understand what your objectives and goals are and who your target audience is and how they receive the messages that you want to send to them.
And what the most efficient and effective way
That's
to
right.
do that is.
That's right.
So it might be a trade show, it might be a blog, it might be a PR event, it could
That's
be,
right.
or it could be, you know, a well-done website.
Well, let's just start with a well-done website. It should always be a well-done website.
Yeah, that's kind of the validator that people go to now, isn't
that's
it?
Right. Like I said, the website is yesterday's business card. I mean, in general, if people hear about your company, they will go to the internet and check you out first on the web.
Okay.
And you want your message to be strong, and you want to engage them, and you want them to want to learn more.
So, speaking of the web, you know, we hear an awful lot about social media and how it can help your company. What's your view on that?
Well, I think more and more social media is becoming very, very important, and it's an extremely important way for people to connect. So if you create a strong community within your social media campaign, you can provide valuable content, and tips and guides to help your consumers or potential consumers. But basically, you're creating a community to help them become more aware of who you are and engage with them.
And that engage is a big word here, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's not a one-way communication.
No, I think companies make a mistake when they get into the social media only to advertise and market their company. They really need to build a community. I think, in my opinion, that's what social media is.
It's a people-to-people thing. It's kind of like going back to knowing the old grocer knowing you when you walked in.
Right, right. And the stronger you create that connection with your community, the more they're going to look to you as the expert. And then they'll be referring you as well because, you know, hey, so-and-so said to do this, and people will start learning more and more about you.
Now, there's the other side of social media, which if you're not doing it right and you're not delivering.
Right.
What happens?
Then it's ineffective or it can turn people off.
And they'll tell their friends and their friends will tell their friends. And you can, somebody put it very well, you can run but you can't hide now.
Well, Chris, I don't have any clients like that, but I do understand what you're saying.
Well, because you keep them out of trouble. But it really is true that your reputation now will follow you on social media like the cat you're trying to get rid of.
Right. I think this message is pretty clear out there, but I have heard still for companies, employees of companies will get on the face page or and just badmouth employees or just their bad day, and it is extremely harmful.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I just can't believe companies still allow people to do that. I mean, I'm sure they don't allow it, but they're not paying attention to it.
Yeah, and maybe that's telling them something, or should tell them something. Yeah, about their environment and how the working environment and how people feel about it.
That's right.
These things don't whether or not you pay attention to them, they're going to be there.
Yes.
And this is really a pretty good conduit to find out what's going on. So if you look at it as a positive, that's good. But what about negative? Let's face it. I mean, there is the very tail end of the distribution out there that is, they just don't think like everybody else does. And if you get there are several of them out there, like scam.com and a bunch of things like that. And anybody can post anything out there. How do you deal with negative comments that just simply aren't true, or people that are disgruntled? What's your advice to companies that run into that?
I guess I would just be as honest as possible about the situation, maybe build a PR campaign as well to help counteract that, depending on the scale of it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is the sort of thing where, if somebody is doing that, particularly, it's really a good opportunity for customer service.
Right.
When you see somebody that's griped about the way they were treated, if there was another side to it, it's your chance to say, well, here's what we did kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I know that companies do that, and they actually reach out to the people that are disgruntled. I thought you meant a scam where it was really attacked.
No, not a scam. a scam is a scam. There's no way you can cover that one up.
Right.
Except change your name and hope nobody finds it. And I've run into several lately where, after they rip off a group, they'll change their name and reemerge, but
yes.
It's basically the same pitch over again, and they'll do it again in another industry.
Right. No, but I do think the smart companies will address immediately, hopefully privately, the concerns of the people that have said that they're disgruntled.
And then the people that, you've done everything reasonable for, if you said, here's what we did.
That's right.
People are not dumb. They can read between the lines. And that's part of advertising, isn't it? I mean, that really is, in fact, might even be your best advertisement, is everybody's going to have problems. How did you deal with it?
That's right.
So those are the kind of things, do nonprofits run into those problems?
I would think so.
Like most companies, there's somebody that will claim that, it didn't, follow through, or there was insufficient aid or whatever.
Right. Or maybe they just misinterpreted their mission, the association's mission, whatever.
Ongoing, you've got a campaign that's promoted something. What's kind of the life cycle of a campaign, and You know, how often do you go back and revisit the strategy and your tactics and then revitalize it and go back to market?
I mean, for small, mid-sized companies, I would recommend clearly defining your target, you know, your strategy, mm-hmm. and then every 4 to 6 months reviewing that to make sure it's going as long as you had hoped and see if there's anything that you can change to increase the value of your marketing efforts. And then, again, once a year, redefine it again. Not completely, you know, just keep in check, look at the analytics, look at where your money's going and what kind of investment you're getting. Is the message clear? Is it a good message still? I mean, things change all the time. And one of the things you want to consider is what has changed within technology. Mm-hmm. And is there a better way to promote your service or product? You know, because it constantly changes. So,
You know, your services cover from really one end of marketing to the other, starting with the strategy all the way through with websites and design, search engine optimization, the whole thing.
Well, yes. I mean, I understand it all very well, but I don't do it all. I've built a really great team of people around me. There's a man that I know that's extremely great with social media and was just rated top number one. And, you know, I know people that are other great designers, writers, photographers. So it's basically once we define what that strategy is, what's the best way to implement it, and sometimes I'm just project management. So,
yeah. an example of today's new company that, you know,
yes.
it's really a virtual company that comes together to solve problems.
One of the key things I'm doing right now is going into mid-sized companies, small to mid-sized companies, and trying to act as a marketing department, outsourced marketing department, because a lot of companies can't afford or can only afford one marketing person. But if they work with us, they have a team of people for a much smaller cost because we're not on payroll. We're not getting benefits.
So it's really a more efficient way for us to do business. We've really squeezed a lot of cost out of doing these things where you used to have people full time, even though it might not be really a full time job.
And one person might not be qualified for all of the requirements that are needed within the marketing department, per se.
Well, that's fantastic. So, Julie, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Well, my number is 770-922-1200. My website is www.gracedesign.net.
And an email?
Julie@gracedesign.net.
Okay, Julie, well, thank you for being on this morning. Can you wait in studio for our next guest to finish?
Sure, I'd love to hear what he has to say. Thank you, Chris.
Actually, okay. I'm still taking notes, Julie, so.
Yeah, I said I think we maybe have sold a customer for
Call
you there.
Yeah,
we'll get our usual fee for that. Well, Reed Trago is with us, and welcome, Reed. Glad to have you and to talk about Huntington Learning Centers and all the things that are going on with education today and the role that you're playing in helping people get their kids educated and motivated.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
So why do people bring their children to you?
People come to us, and it's interesting to talk about the marketing angle because I think we've done a pretty good job of identifying at least our primary market. But people come to us. It's usually moms call most often when things aren't going well with school. They don't come to us because everything's going great. And so they come when maybe there's struggle over homework or they have a child who's not reading well or not able to complete their work, not able to be successful in math in school. So they come to us. We provide individualized testing and tutoring. And so they come in, we do an evaluation, and we identify strengths and weaknesses of the child as far as their academics are concerned, and then we put together a plan to remedy those issues.
And what is the most common thing that people have? Why do they come to you most often? What's the first thing they usually talk about?
It depends on the age of the child, right?
Okay.
Because there's different scenarios. Third grade and below, most frequently the concern is my child isn't reading well. The teacher has a concern at school. What can we do? I'm interested in, you know, how we help my child. From fourth grade to ninth grade or 10th grade, those can be a range of problems. Maybe that people call because they have study skills problems, which means probably means that there's a struggle during homework time. They call because my child's not good in math. A whole range. Maybe they're not doing well on tests, whatever it might be. And then once we get into the upper high school grades, the problems change a little bit. It's SAT prep, ACT test prep. They're thinking about going to college. They've got an AP physics class, and that's a struggle for them, or whatever that might be. And so those are really the three segments that we see most frequently.
And when you get, if you take them piece by piece, you know, how do you, you know, are these, you know, symptoms, or are these actual, you know, issues? I mean, you know, one is, you know, is a lack of focus, for instance, a symptom of something else that you have to get to the bottom of to be able to change that?
Yeah, a really common one is a seventh or eighth grade boy.
Okay.
Who is not focused.
I can tell you why that is.
Yeah, I can too. We all know there's a lot going on in seventh and eighth grade kids, and it's an organization problem. Oh, I know he did, Mom says, I know he does his homework, but then he doesn't turn it in. He can't find it. He said the teacher didn't ask for it. Maybe so, but it's there. We know it's there. And I, you know, just in working with lots of kids over 9 years at my center in Woodstock, I think organization is a motivation problem. These kids can make it to baseball practice on time. They remember their football equipment. They can find it. They have struggles finding their math homework to turn in. For whatever reason, maybe they're not motivated. And yes, those are symptoms. We have to go back and find the actual problem. And you know what? If they're not good at fractions, if they're not good at division and decimals and ratios and percents and whatever that might be, by eighth grade, math's going to be a struggle. So no, they're not motivated to turn in their homework because it's not going to be right anyway.
You know, we all know that schools never seem to have enough money. Is it worse now than it used to be, and has that had an effect on, you know, students and their learning?
I think yes, absolutely, no question. They never quite have enough money, and there's a lot of politics in Georgia involved in all of that, which I won't get into. But the net effect really has been we've got bigger classes all over the place. You've got fourth grade classes with 33 students in them, for example, in certain areas. That's just a lot of kids for any teacher to manage. So when that happens, teachers don't feel successful, kids don't feel successful, parents feel neglected every once in a while. It's not all the time. Look, the people that come to us are coming to us because things aren't going well. It's not everybody. We have to remember that too. Mm-hmm. But when things aren't going well, that's what we can be there to help them.
Yeah, yeah. That not everybody learns at the same pace or the same way.
No. And a long time ago, and when we came and we decided to open up this center here, mm-hmm. people would say, Georgia's really low in education, and, oh, you'll be busy. You know what? Huntington Learning Centers has 32 or 3 corporate centers around New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Great school systems, and they're very, very busy. No matter where you are in the country, there are going to be kids who struggle, who just don't pick it up the first time through. And somebody's got to be there to kind of fill in the missing pieces, or, you know, the cracks in the foundation, and that's what we serve.
And what do you actually do when somebody comes in with one of these gaps?
We ask them questions about what they see. We perform, based on what they say, we perform an academic evaluation that looks at, could be sight words and reading and oral reading, silent reading. Ask them questions after they read a passage. Look at their study skills, math skills, just basic computation, math word problems. We look at their writing. We look at how they take a complex task and break it down. So we really, really can identify what they're good at and where they're weak. Then we go through a conference process where we meet with the parents, tell them, here's what we see. If it's something we can deal with, then we say, here would be, based on our experience, a time frame that we're looking at, like how long it's going to take to get this child back on target. And then we set up a schedule for that child, and they can come to the center. Some kids are there 2 or 3 days a week. And the instruction there is very, it's individualized and structured so that kids have their own set of curricula based on their own evaluations. So we're really targeting what their needs are.
Yeah, and you know, tell me a little bit about your program and the curricula you use with a particular child. Where did that come from? How did that grow up? And what are the advantages of what you do there?
We use curricula, honestly, that's kind of available anywhere. Do you remember in elementary school you had the SRA boxes with all the cards you pulled out and you had to read the little story? You know, maybe you do, maybe you don't. You're looking at me funny, but I remember them, and we have those.
Ours were all pictures.
Yes.
We could read.
Yeah, and so we use, there's probably 700 or 800 pieces of curricula in the center. And so it's not the specific curricula that I think makes a huge difference. It's the way we mix it all together. So depending on a child's weaknesses, we can work on different elements of reading, for example. We can see, okay, a child reads a couple paragraphs and can't summarize it. Well, they need help learning to get the main idea. Or they read a few paragraphs and they can't remember the important facts. Well, they need to learn how to read a paragraph and watch for things that can be proven true. And those are facts. And that's how we're going to learn to study when we read a chemistry book or a social studies book. We're going to look for important dates and times and places and names and people.
Now, you said we do this. Well, I know you're not doing it all. You know, who do you use in your centers to help kids do this?
Our centers are all accredited by the same people that accredit schools. And so we have to have certified teachers just like they do. Most of our teachers are part-time. In fact, all my teachers are part-time now that I think about it. But they work for us between, maybe some will work as little as 4 hours a week. I have others that work up to 25 hours a week, depending what our needs are at the time.
Are they in the school system now?
Some are, and there are like 300 centers, Huntington's around the country, so I don't want to speak for all of them. I can tell you at my center, a lot of my teachers are not currently teaching in the school system. It seems like a lot of them were teachers, stayed home when they had kids, and now they like this schedule because they can come to us. It's an after-school schedule. Dad gets home from work or whatever. He can take over the kids, and they can come and teach for us because we're really busy from about 4 to 8:30 at night. And then Saturdays, so it's not as much a daytime thing.
I see. Mm-hmm. Now, the schools have programs that, you know, kind of are designed to help these same kids.
Mm-hmm.
And how does your program compare to those?
Yes, they do. They have EIP, IEP, SST, RTI. It's just an alphabet mix.
They have DUM for me.
but they do have lots of programs, and that is absolutely the first place the parents can start when their child is struggling. I would. It's included in there. They're already at school. You might as well try that. It's going to work for some kids. Most of the time when it hasn't worked for kids is where parents need to take that next step, and they'll start to seek us out.
Now, I understand that there has been a real push to try to get a single number kind of thing that defines the capability of kids, a common score kind of thing. Can you explain what that is and what effect that has had?
As in standardized testing and things like that?
Yeah, evidently, you know, it's kind of like a way to measure progress and, you know, where you should be now versus, you know, where you are.
Right. We've had all these years, and I'm not an expert in these matters, but we've had all these years of No Child Left Behind. We're introducing Common Core standards around the country now. There's a new program called Race to the Top. These programs are initiatives, I guess, are all designed to figure out if our schools are succeeding or not. And so in the past, you know, parents around in Georgia, especially, well, every state actually, but especially, you know, where we are, we hear about the CRCT. It's Criterion Referenced Competency Test. Big words. But that is a test that's given at the end of the year to see if kids are meeting or exceeding the basic elements of what they're supposed to learn by grade. And technically, if a child in third, fifth, or eighth grade doesn't meet the standards, they're not supposed to go to the next grade. So it's tricky, though, because you're talking about a test 1 week during the year, near the end of the year, hope that child's feeling well. I don't want to say it invalidates the results, but we put a lot of pressure on these kids for that one test. And I don't think anybody's really a fan of it. I know teachers don't like it, administrators don't like it, parents don't like it. So they are going to change some things about that, and we'll see what kind of comes down the pike.
So how does what you do help a parent and their child deal with that, you know, major test?
Well, those tests, the CRCT especially, is a minimum standards test. It is, if we say it accurately, it's the least you have to know to be passed to the next grade. Parents often feel that, well, we passed the CRCT, we should be ready for the next grade. It's not really it. It's really the least you have to know. So what happens is, if a child is going to struggle on the CRCT in April, really there's some underlying issues there. Probably a reading issue, math issue, problem solving, whatever that might be. Those are the problems that need to be addressed. There's a lot of CRCT prep going on in schools. There are homework assignments online every night. They're practicing lots of multiple choice test-taking strategies in school. These kids are hearing what they need to hear. Unfortunately, some of them just don't have the skill base to be successful on that yet.
And that's really what you can help with, is build that mm-hmm. skill base up. It's kind of like a football practice. You can't really play in the game until you've got the basics down cold.
That's right. And I'm from Indiana originally, so we talk about basketball.
Ah. I understand, you know, that you have a team.
Yes, we do have a team. And it's the same thing, though. Kids in learning terms, I guess, or in basketball terms, they need to be able to dribble, shoot, pass, and see the floor. Beyond that, the rest of it gets very, very difficult.
Yeah, but if you don't have those basic skills, you can't play the game.
No.
You know, and, you know, in the game of life, education and what you know and all these things, you know, are really part of playing the game.
Right.
So, you know, get the basics down, mm-hmm. you know, and get them down early and don't let them go. They don't get better over time.
That is a great point. Earlier, the better.
So how about students that have, you know, learning disabilities? Do you work with any of those?
We do. We see kids that have different learning disabilities or difficulties all the time, whether it's ADD or ADHD to dyslexia or dysgraphia, all valid concerns. And in the end, I don't think they're necessarily any miracle cures. Okay. And in the end, some kids are going to need more repetition, more one-to-one support in order to overcome or cope with those difficulties. But yet, the thing we see in ADD or ADHD is very common, and again, we'll go back to 7th and 8th grade boys, I guess, which I was distracted too. But the fact is, when kids really, really are suffering from not being able to focus, the pistons are just firing too fast in their head, and they're in math class, and boy, they just zone out here, there, or miss something. What's happening is they're missing things. And so by the time that manifests itself at home, it's probably in lost homework or fighting over homework or some sort of family discord, that's a good time for us to step in and help. I think a lot of people kind of come and hire us, hoping that I will be able to tell this child something that they've been telling them for years, and it'll make a difference. And I say, that's okay, my kids don't listen to me either.
Yeah, yeah. It really is a process. It's not a miracle cure. You have to work with the reality of that individual child and build a program around them and work with them over a period of time to change how they behave, you know, how they learn, what they learn, what their skill base is really what you're saying.
Absolutely. You know this as well as anybody. You can go to a business event one weekend and get all fired up and motivated, and guess what? By about Tuesday, you've misplaced your notes.
Yep.
It has to be an ongoing process. I'm sure that you work with people the same way. It has to be an ongoing process so that we're creating habits, not an event that we're hoping is going to change.
And you have to change beliefs before you change behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you spoke about that earlier about mm-hmm. beliefs and yep. and how you know people are not focused. They can remember their football equipment, but you know their belief system is that's what's important.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and they haven't really figured out how this other stuff that's kind of a lot less obvious fits in.
Right.
So final question, I guess, is you've gotten them through high school. You know, they're now looking at the SAT and ACT tests, big important things for where you place and get in college and scholarships, which everybody needs nowadays, I think. How do you help with that?
We bring kids in, and we love to see them as juniors before they've been out to take one of these tests, just if nothing else to get a baseline. In many counties around Atlanta and certainly in Cherokee where we are, kids take the PSAT in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, and that gives them a fair baseline, and we can use that information. But we'll have them come in, they take an ACT or an SAT, and then we start to talk about how if that score is where they need it, then they're just happy, and we tell them to go apply to college. If it's not where they need it, then we have to put together a strategy to fix that. And there are lots of options out there. The schools often offer Saturday classes for a few weeks leading up to tests, and those are classes. We don't necessarily do classes. We do one-to-one instruction, so it is more expensive, but it's very rewarding on the backside.
It's very tailored to that completely. Particular child.
It is completely, yes.
And that's really the difference. I mean, it's not a kind of one size fits all. This thing is really highly tailored.
Right.
And that's really what you're paying for, is that individual attention that you don't get in the school system.
You're right. I call myself a professional nerd. People need to be happy for me because I like this SAT, ACT stuff. I hire people smarter than me to teach it, and I like strategizing with them about when we're going to take this test, how long we're going to work on things leading up to it, what we need to work on, and just really setting targets for kids, because I think that goal setting is good for them down the road, too.
It sounds like you got have a real passion for this.
I would say so.
Yeah. What was your background?
I grew up in a cornfield in Illinois. Actually, it's a small town called Hoopston, Illinois. And I went to Indiana University. So my hometown had 5,000 people in it. And then I went to a school with 35,000 kids, which was quite a shock. I survived and came to Atlanta when I graduated, worked in the telecom industry for 10 years. But I just always had I always just wanted to work and live in my community, where I go to church, where I shop, where I just am all the time. I live currently 4 miles from my business, and so I run into students all the time, grocery store, church, or wherever we might be out in the community. So 9 years ago, I just really wanted to own my own little business, and I loved working with kids then. Little did I know I was going to end up hiring people to work with kids, but they get to teach them the reading and the math and the writing and all this stuff that is important. I get to talk to them about fun stuff. So I get to talk to kids about how their ball game went or, what's happening at school. And right now it's, I'm a big NCAA basketball fan. So I've got some kids in there who are giving me a hard time. And if my team loses, they're going to give me a really hard time. So.
Well, they have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, Reed, it's been very interesting. It's an area that, is kind of foreign to me at this point, but I really do understand the value of that one-on-one instruction, getting the basics down and not letting things go. I mean, what you're telling people is take the thing your kid's the weakest in and make it his strongest thing.
You're trying. And we know that we're like an orthodontist or a dentist. Nobody really wants to come to us. We understand that. So I tell our teachers, every day a child needs to come in here. You need to teach them something that they can latch onto so they feel so good they can't wait to come back. And if we can send them out every day feeling better than they felt when they came in, we've had success for that day.
And over time, that has an effect.
Absolutely.
So if you have a child who you think could benefit from this, how do people get in touch with you, Reed?
Our website's huntingtonhelps.com, and you can go there and search the locations. There are several around the country. Our center, or our phone number is 1-800-CAN-LEARN, or you can call the center in Woodstock if you're nearby. It's 678-445-4746.
Well, thanks, everybody, for being on our show today, and thanks for listening in. We're always on the lookout for good companies with great stories like these who help businesses and people in the community do better, be smarter, and progress faster. If you know one of those, or if you're one of those, drop us a line here at Business Radio X. Let us know, and we'll see if we can get you on one of our shows.